so, and I'm not sure who everyone is, so the next item will be a public forum. If there's anybody who wishes to address the board on any item that is not already on the agenda, maybe Sue could get the agenda up so it's clear what items we're still dealing with.
Does Dee Dee want to come?
Is that where you want me?
No, you will be. But this won't take long.
No, I'm not actually on the agenda.
No, you're under board reports, which will follow public forum. So that's anybody who wishes to address the board on any item that's not already on our agenda, and you can speak for 5 minutes. First, you have to put in one of these orange cards saying your name and what you wish to speak about. I have no speaker card, so I'm assuming nobody wants to speak during public forum. I'm just checking to make sure that's correct. Okay, with that, we'll go to board reports, and we are very fortunate today to have State Board Member Dee Dee Diadamo visiting with us today, and she's going to give us a presentation.
Good morning. Good to see you all. I have a PowerPoint.
Yeah.
While it's being loaded up, I'll just say that how fortunate for me to be here today where you're talking about your accomplishments and priorities. So I found that to be really interesting, especially to hear about the specific challenges that you have with limited resources. You have such a large geographic area, and I know this region is unique in so many ways. So I appreciated the opportunity to listen in on the discussion. As far as the specific issue that was raised about performance targets and you all exercising your sound judgment as far as a need to make adjustments as you see fit that meet your overarching goals and priorities, public health, for example, looking at shifting over to Hinckley as needed. I'm happy to work with your executive officer on any follow-up discussions with staff. It sounds like you probably had a good discussion in the last round, but if you'd like for me to sit in or participate in some way in the future, I'm happy to do so.
I'd love to talk to you more about ideas and get a better process.
Right. Understood. I think that before I came over to the State Board, there was a big shift in moving toward the performance reports. And there are, I think our board embraces it, and I know the regional boards do as well. I think it helps all of us to be thinking strategically and to wisely use resources, but sometimes it can kind of lock you in. And so I think that the specific case in point is an example of that. So what I wanted to do is just go over a couple of key areas. I was planning on giving you a drought update, going through the urban water conservation regulation, the statewide mandate that we've been working on over the last couple of years. And then also address the human right to water. We adopted a resolution a couple of months ago on that. And then talk a little bit about some funding opportunities. Okay, so it really has, it's been interesting with El Nino. I think that there probably isn't anybody in the room here that expected El Nino to be our savior. But this is something that we have been messaging whenever we have the opportunity to talk about the drought because, the public really, especially with the big frenzy in the press about El Nino, El Godzilla, whatever you want to call it, that it was, really going to come through and get us out of this drought. And so I'm going to just breeze through these slides because I think that a lot of you already understand that El Nino is not going to get us out of the drought. We're in a big hole. It's going to take us years to get out of this. I'd like to just quickly go through some of the indicators of why we can see that it's going to be a long time coming before we can say that we're actually out of the drought. So as of March 1, recognizing this doesn't pick up the recent storms we had over the last few days, and hopefully we'll get some, you know, some more storms coming through here. But as of March 1, 38% of the state was still classified as exceptional drought, and extreme drought, 61% of the state. And this is according to the United States Drought Monitor, which looks at a number of different factors, some of which I'll be going through here. This is a slide that our urban conservation team put together, and they kind of look at conditions month by month to kind of, you know, to track this state's performance. And it's interesting, you know, some months are better than others, and in large part, it really is dependent upon what were the temperatures that month and comparing it to the precipitation. So I'll be talking about the urban conservation regulation in a bit, but if we just take a snapshot at, you know, one month in particular, January of this year was hotter than January 2013, but wetter than January 2013. So we have seen more precipitation, most definitely, not for February, but for January we had some good storms, but it was warmer, and so that definitely affects our ability, to be getting out of the drought. In fact, over the last 3 years, we've had record-breaking temperatures, and we expect with climate change that that's likely to continue, so it's just a factor that we need to deal with. And looking at precipitation, this is just looking at January, but if we look at precipitation currently picking up this week's storms, Northern Sierra precipitation, what's called the 8-station index, we're at 115% of average. So definitely gained some ground as a result of these recent storms. And then going further south, San Joaquin, 109%, the Tulare Basin, 105%. So definitely things are looking better as far as precipitation. And what's also looking better, but still, this is where we have, you know, still quite a bit of a hole here, is the reservoirs. So over the last couple of weeks, we have seen Shasta in particular really gaining, at this point, 68% of capacity, which is 90% of the historic average to date. Folsom in particular has been in the news a lot. Folsom is at 72% of storage, which is 126% of historic average for this time of year. Another key reservoir is Lake Oroville. I know it's kind of hard to read the figures there, so I'll just go through a few. Lake Oroville at 61% of capacity. But then there's, you know, still remaining some significant trouble spots. New Melones, 21% of capacity. Exchequer at 22%. San Luis Reservoir, 45% of capacity. And then in Southern California, Castaic Lake, 30% of capacity. Lake Paris, 34%. I'm going to be going to Region 8, so I'm using this PowerPoint for Southern California as well. But just, and this has not been updated, but at last check, Diamond Valley at 39% of capacity, and I already went through Castaic. Okay, so snow water equivalents, the snowpack. So we all know the dismal snowpack last year was just, you know, really a disaster, which snowpack is accounts for 1/3 of our reservoir storage in California. So without that hefty snowpack, that's in large part why we were starting this year with those reservoirs so low. This year, of course, has been much better. But it kind of fluctuates from month to month, which is, you know, part of this new normal that we're seeing. You know, usually we would see the greatest precipitation in December, January, February, and now, you know, things have changed a little bit. Here we have a stronger month in March, not much at all in February. So at this point, the percent of normal for this date is 83%. And if we were to just not have any further events, if we compare it to an April 1 average, which is, you know, the real target there for snowpack, we would be at 78%. So much better than last year, most definitely. But you know, we continue we not just need to be focusing on refilling those reservoirs, but also groundwater. The groundwater basins have really suffered as a result of, you know, this extended drought. And we've seen some areas where groundwater levels have dropped as much as 100 feet. I've been involved, State Water Board, the Governor's Office, Department of Water Resources, on the subsidence report that came out last year, where there are some areas where where we've actually seen the clay layers compact and ground levels subside, ground levels dropping. And there's one particular trouble spot that's over by the California Aqueduct. And so this is a real serious situation, but if we look historically, groundwater levels do go down during periods of drought, and so it's something to be expected, but it's something that we need to really be doing a better job with on managing. And I'm glad to see you've got SGMA, you know, as one of your top priorities. The Sustainable Groundwater Management Act will, you know, force these discussions at the local level, which is really where the action needs to be taking place in order to address this from a sustainability perspective. But in the meantime, in order to say that we're out of the drought, we've got to get those groundwater levels back. Okay, so I regret that Board Member Cox isn't here for this. We had a good discussion at dinner last night. I was really hoping to walk you through the urban conservation regulation that we have recently updated. We have the executive order from the governor directing us to be having, you know, urban conservation targets for the entire state, trying to target a 25% reduction. And so this has been an interesting experience. I think that the marks that we've gotten on this, by and large, are pretty positive. So if you look at the target period for the 25%, which was the direction that the governor gave us, from June to January, so we have one more month here before we close out this period for this 25% target. We're awfully close. So the goal is 1.2 million acre feet, and we are 96% there. So I think that when the numbers come out in the next round, we'll see that bucket filling up, you know, even further. And that savings is enough to provide 5.7 million Californians with water for 1 year, close to being able to fill Lake Oroville. So, you know, it's a significant effort that everyone in the state, you know, really rolled up their sleeves and got to it, but not without its challenges. Looking here at the statewide monthly average, so from June of 2015 to January, those figures for monthly gallons per capita per day continue to go down, and you would expect that anyway during the winter months because we don't have outdoor watering. But just taking the January 2016 date and comparing it to previous years. So we're at 61 this year. In January 2015, the statewide average was at 70.5. January 2013, 73.8. So a significant drop in residential gallons per capita per day. And, you know, I think in large part this has really been a partnership with the locals. We have, with SaveOurWater.com, you know, strong messaging from the administration, and of course, I think our board chair, Felicia Marcus, in particular, she's been on the news a lot and, you know, really helped with getting the messaging out. But what we have seen has helped also is that the local suppliers have enforcement authority, and it kind of took a while for them to get up and running with exerting their enforcement authority, but we could see as they issued complaints, as they issued warnings, as they, you know, actually assessed penalties, we could see that those numbers, that those targets were closer to getting achieved. And so As we go forward, then there are still some areas that have not been able to hit their targets, and we've heard that One size doesn't fit all, and really we were trying to keep this simple, which is why we tried to stick to a statewide average of 25% reduction, but then we made adjustments for communities based upon the baseline and previous actions. So the example that I think, you know, is a good one, it wouldn't make much sense to require Santa Cruz, for example, to go and have a 25% reduction where they are already at the lowest gallons per capita per day in the state. And so really trying to figure out, you know, how do you balance out a variety of different factors, historic conservation levels, climate adjustments, what about for those communities that have adopted drought-resilient supplies. And so that 25% is the statewide average, but some communities that haven't done much in the past, their requirement, their conservation targets are quite high, you know, 38%, 36%. And for others, you know, that have already done quite a bit, their conservation targets are lower. And so for those that continue to have challenges, that's where the State Board has stepped in. And so we have issued, through the Office of Enforcement, 97 warning letters, notices of violations. We do have some alternative compliance orders. In particular, there are some communities where the order doesn't quite fit. An example of that would be a community that has maybe a small population but a large food processing industry. And so really what we're trying to do is target residential use, in particular outdoor irrigation, and not impact, even though we do expect the commercial industrial sector to be efficient. We're not trying to go after activities that would affect the economy. And so in those situations, we have put together alternative compliance orders. And so through time, I think that between the local enforcement actions and then the State Board, it has really helped to get the message that we mean business about wanting this regulation to work. But now the question becomes going forward. And we had an interesting meeting when we readopted. There were a lot of concerns, some communities coming in saying that they felt that we should provide for you know, adjustments for climate, adjustments for population. What do you do about a community that's growing and that we have this baseline that we're using from 2013? So we did make some adjustments that we're living under right now, but we've committed to come back and take a look at it, you know, hoping that the precipitation continues and that maybe we could look at greater flexibility. And so this will be coming back to our board at the next meeting in March, and I believe coming out soon will be a notice for a workshop on April 20th. And so I'd encourage you all, if you have, you know, any suggestions for us as to, you know, how to better find the sweet spot going forward, you know, provide for some additional flexibility, but keep the pressure on, because we definitely, you know, as things get better and we get out of the drought, the question then becomes, what should we do going forward as far as a permanent regulation? And I'm thinking probably what would make a lot of sense would at least, you know, at a minimum be to continue to get the information from the locals, from the local urban water management districts, as far as their water production, their targets, and whether or not they are meeting their own programs. And then kind of the obvious stuff as far as prohibitions, you know, you can't water your sidewalk, that sort of thing. You have to have a shut-off nozzle when you water your car, when you wash your car. So obvious things going forward on the permanent regulations, but also looking at one way to go forward on additional flexibility so that as we ease up but then be ready to go in the next round, we have a system that makes sense from the perspective of the individual water suppliers and not as much of a one-size-fits-all. Okay. I wanted to just maybe point out a couple of areas here. One area that's we've seen a lot of challenges, Bayon Pinon Community Services District. I talked with Board Member Cox about that. So their conservation standard is 32%, and their cumulative savings has been 17%. They are under a conservation order, and so it's interesting. If you look at January of 2016, they shot way up to 32%. So after sitting down and working with our staff, it does seem to have made a difference, but that's an area where, you know, there will continue to be some challenges. A shout-out to Mammoth Community Water District. Their conservation standard is 20%, and their cumulative 29%. I don't know what happened in January. They're at 14%, so I don't know what the problem was there. But looking at, you know, the cumulative savings, they did really well. So. Okay. Then the other thing that I wanted to go over is the human right to water. As you all know, the legislature adopted the human right to water in 2012, and the human right to water requires state agencies, and specifically calls out the Water Board. I've got some language here that I'll just go ahead and read to consider the human right to water, and the human right to water being that all every human being has the right to safe, clean, affordable, and accessible drinking water. Water adequate for human consumption, cooking, and sanitation purposes. So the legislation specifically calls out the State Board and the State Department of Public Health that the State Board shall consider whenever we adopt policies, regulations, and grant criteria that we shall consider the human right to water. So we've been doing that since 2012, but Board Member Dodek felt that it was important that we actually adopt a resolution and establish that the human right to water is a core value of the Water Boards. And so we just did that at our February meeting, and we went a little further than the state law requires. And so what I'd like to do is just go through that resolution and let you know how it involves the regional water boards. So the resolution, again, establishes the human right to water as a core value, and it requires our board to consider the human right to water in all actions that we take. And that's not just limited to the actions that are specifically provided for in the statute with respect to policies, regulations, and grant criteria, but we go further, and in the resolution, we specifically call out water quality control plans, permitting, site remediation, monitoring, water right administration. So we are really looking to, and not just check the box, but actually consider human right to water in all actions that we take. And that as staff makes recommendations to us in these areas, that they describe how the human right to water was actually considered. So thoroughly going through this in every action that we take. And with respect to the regional boards, the resolution encourages the regional boards to also do this. Then kind of getting back to, you know, the performance discussion that we had earlier, our board is required to now collect data to track and identify the trouble spots. And so we've directed our staff to work closely with the stakeholder community to develop in any improvements to data collection in order for us to better understand where the challenges exist. And then also to work with the stakeholder community to develop performance measures so that we can determine improved outcomes. Meaningful stakeholder engagement, that we've also called that out. And then one area that I think is interesting is that we had Region 5 stakeholders come in when we adopted this and encouraged us to include a provision that directs regional boards and our staff to look for opportunities to incentivize regional approaches. And so a regional approach example would be what Region 5 is looking at, CV Salts, long-term solutions, but providing for incentives for providing drinking water in the short run. And so looking for opportunities and encouraging regional boards to look for opportunities to incentivize those regional approaches. And then lastly, that we require staff to put together an annual report to the board. Last thing I wanted to go over is funding opportunities, and I think that I've been here before and updated you on Prop 1, but now the dollars are starting to roll out. So, of course, funding there for storage, integrated regional water management plans, water use efficiency, groundwater cleanup, safe drinking water, watershed restoration, stormwater. And what I'd like to do is just go through a couple of areas, calling out the Stormwater Grant Program, $200 million. We adopted a criteria for that grant program, and our staff is currently accepting applications for the planning grants. Those were due March 4th, $20 million in planning grants, and then implementation proposals are due in July 8th, and that's for $166 million available for that. And these stormwater funds are available, as you know, for multi-benefit stormwater management projects, green infrastructure projects, stormwater capture, recharge, stormwater treatment facilities. So you get higher points for multiple benefits. And then the other area that we're working on right now is draft guidelines for the groundwater funding. We have public workshops that are that staff is doing in the month of March, and this will be up for board consideration in May of this year. I'm looking here for the amount. Let's see here. Yeah, for groundwater, $100 million is set aside for management, and then $800 million for cleanup. And then I was just reading through some notes here on integrated regional water management planning. The Department of Water Resources has just, their process is underway as well. The funding for IRWM is going through DWR. But they, out of the $510 million, they've set aside $25 million for the Lahontan area. And then the other thing that the department is working on that you all might be interested in, I know there's a great interest in the development of the regulations for SGMA, for the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, and the development of the sustainable plans and the guidelines as to what those plans need to include. The draft regulations have been released, and the public comment period ends for that March 25th. There are workshops underway for the month of March, so that might be something worth looking at as well, and the, those guidelines have to be approved by the California Water Commission, and they're slated to approve those guidelines by late spring. And that needs to be done in order to provide the groundwater sustainability agencies with the information that they need in order to put the plans together so that they can meet their deadlines coming up. Okay, that's all I have. Any questions?
Thank you very much.
A question.
What is the saying? It's don't ever let a crisis go to waste.
Let a crisis go to waste.
State Board, you've had so much on your plate the last few years, and you've just been doing remarkable things. So
it's been a whirlwind, yeah. But it continues. The thing that I think we're all committed to is when this drought ends, having policies, having recommendations in place, so that we can move forward and not go through the confusion that we did when it all started.
Yeah, you know, it's a great opportunity to address some of the long-term needs that we've needed to look at and to develop policies and have them in place. right. on a permanent basis.
Right, and the Water Action Plan definitely helped with that. I think that with between climate change and the focus that this administration has had on the big picture and how, you know, flood is just part of drought. You know, they're, it's all integrated, and looking for constant opportunities for constant planning, and also seeing how the various components fit in and are interrelated. We just don't want the situation to happen where we've got to go and look for the 1977 drought report and try and find it and dust it off. We want to have something ready to go for the next round. You had a question?
Yeah, back to your slide on the Region 6 water conservation. I think it's about four back. There's a the water use, that fourth column, GCPD, is that the gallons?
Residential gallons per capita per day.
Okay. Is there a number that you're trying to get to on that consumption?
Okay, so gallons per capita per day. Take a look at that, and then let's go back to this. Okay, so this is statewide, and most definitely depending on the region. So the Lahontan region, the San Joaquin Valley region, the Inland Empire, those numbers are going to be higher. So the targets, the districts that were called out in that chart are actually doing pretty good
right.
if you look at the statewide average.
Right.
But when we get reports, we will actually get them by region. And so you can see that, you know, the coastal areas do better by looking at this approach. They do better than areas where they have, you know, higher temperatures. And so going forward, the questions are, should we look at more of an efficiency standard, a statewide efficiency standard with some adjustments, you know, for climate? Or should we look at a regional approach? Should we just focus on the areas that are in exceptional and extreme drought?
So,
and then, it, you know, if we were to do that, and I think that there is some attractiveness to that, because we've had, in particular, the northern part of the state come in and say, wait a minute, our reservoirs are full, we're doing flood releases, we don't have a groundwater problem, we don't import water, so why are you picking on us? It just doesn't make sense. And so, you know, I think that we have to be open to different approaches. The concern that I have, though, is if we were to go to a regional approach, we would see a map that targets those areas that continue to have challenges. But some of those areas are going to be a little frustrated, and they may feel that they're picked on. So in that instance, maybe going to an efficiency standard makes more sense, that we're looking for the whole state to be efficient, you know, however they accomplish that.
Because it looks like that Fallon Pinyon Hills Community Services District that's under the conservation order has one of the lower use rates. So they're at 49.
Right, for January. Yeah, I think that the conservation order has a lot to do with that.
Okay. Yeah. And how do those numbers fit with this number that's in the it's finding 14 in the resolution on the human right to water? It talks about a water efficiency 2009 Water Efficiency Act of 2009 identifies 55 gallons.
Right.
So is that the same type of number, or is that different?
This is considered 55 gallons per capita per day is considered the efficiency standard. And so looking at the human right to water, even though determinations haven't been made, that's a target that we're looking for in terms of, you know, for communities that their wells have gone dry, and figuring out, you know, what would their replacement water needs be.
Some of these are below, I guess, that number?
Some are, yes.
Okay.
Some communities are actually, they've gone the extra mile, and they're actually below what you would figure, what normally is considered to be at least a minimum.
Okay.
Yeah. I have questions since you're on this slide, just because I've had some conversations with some of our local water districts and their complexities. You mentioned kind of, you know, uniqueness. In our Lake Tahoe, we do have water. So, but there's a lot of snowmaking in this region that takes up a lot of the water, and they can't use recycled water because of our prohibition, so they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place in meeting a goal when they have high use for industrial use. And snowmaking does eventually take back as water, so it's sort of a way of recycling, I guess.
Right.
Did it that way?
Right.
I don't know if you thought about that. I know some folks in the audience that might have some.
You know, that hasn't come to our attention, but it reminds me of the swamp cooler issue. There are, you know, communities that have higher temperatures, and it's more efficient for them to use swamp coolers than it would be to use air conditioning. A lot of those communities are disadvantaged. And so I think that, you know, snowmaking is something that we probably should take a look at. This was an emergency regulation, and we adopted it under a very tight time frame. Now we've got maybe some breathing room to, as we go forward, to come up with some recommendations. Even if we can say that, you know, the drought's not over, but we need to maybe ease up a little bit, what should we recommend going forward for when we need to pull the trigger again? Because when we need to pull the trigger again, we're probably only going to have 30 days to do it. Well, hopefully we won't have just 30 days, but it is quite possible. So it would be good to close out the chapter by having recommendations going forward, you know, including something like that.
Well, yeah, snowmaking is different from swamp coolers in that it's related to our economic base here and also in Mammoth. That's probably what was going on with the Mammoth number as well.
On the drop?
Yeah. Board members have questions?
Relative to snowmaking, it seems like you could consider doing a breakout of snowmaking water. The ski areas all know exactly how much they pumped, and I could give them a, you know, handle it differently.
Right.
Because we know that the actual consumptive use for snowmaking is something less than 85% of what's actually pumped. It could be as little as 90% to get, you know, get that to get back.
Yeah, I know that the ski industry did comment when we adopted the regulations initially, but I haven't heard anything since, so I appreciate you calling this out. Okay.
Just a quick observation. Mm-hmm. I know that the Desert Research Institute, UNR, they do cloud seeding. Many organizations do cloud seeding throughout the Sierras. These are ground stations plus aerial. Have you done any analysis? I've seen documents that talk about a 5% bump.
Documents on what?
A 5% increase in precipitation.
As a result of cloud seeding?
Yes. It has to be done during certain, you know, weather conditions. But have you done any looking at that? Or?
As far in the context of the urban water...
Yes.
Conservation regulation. No, what we included when this came back to us in, I think it was February, what we provided for was just a small opener on drought resilient supplies. And those drought resilient supplies, it was pretty tight, so that it included desal facilities that came online and water recycling for augmentation, not indirect potable, and it included just those two categories as drought resilient supplies. There was a lot of concern from other communities that felt that they had drought resilient supplies. I don't know if cloud seeding might be, it's kind of a novel approach, but maybe if that's a community's approach, that might be something to consider. But we kept it pretty tight and indicated that we would be open to looking to other approaches going forward. So that would be something that, stakeholders or a community would probably want to come in and talk about, this is the drought resilient strategy for that community. I don't know much about it otherwise. Other communities came in and talked about groundwater recharge projects, groundwater banking projects that they should be exempt, or they should at least have the production for those projects account in their baseline.
Any other questions? Well, I want to thank you very much for
your
presentation today and for coming and listening to our discussion this morning. And it's always a pleasure
to
have you.
Good to see you. Thanks.
Now I propose that we take a 15-minute break, and then when we come back, I propose that we finish off board reports, because I think that won't take very long, and then move into the board, and then finish.